History is not made only by kings and parliaments, presidents, wars and generals. It is a story of people, of their love, honour, faith, hope and suffering. Of birth and death, of hunger, thirst and cold, of loneliness and sorrow. In writing my stories, I have found myself looking back again and again to origins, to find and clearly see the ancestors of the pioneers. Some time ago, I decided to tell the story of the American frontier through the eyes of three families, fictional families, but with true and factual experiences. The names I chose were Sackett, Chantry, and Talon. There is a real Sackett family, my research revealed, which derives from the Isle of Ely in Cambridgeshire, England. For historical accuracy, I decided to bring my fictional Sacketts from the same area. Cambridgeshire is fen country, low, boggy land partially covered with water, and the fen men were men of independent mind, as are my fictional Sacketts. They were also hunters and fishermen, which was important, though few of those who first landed in America had any idea of how to survive. In a land teeming with game, with edible wild plants, many were starving in the midst of plenty and had to learn hunting and fishing from the Indians. Story by story, generation by generation, these families are moving westward. When the journeys are ended and the 40-odd books are completed, the reader should have a fairly true sense of what happened on the American frontier. The story that follows is of the first Sackett to come to America. Chapter 1. It was my devil's own temper that brought me to grief. My temper, and a skill with weapons born of my father's teaching. Yet without that skill I might have emptied my life's blood upon the cobblestones of Stamford. Emptied my body of blood. And for what? Until that moment in Stamford, it would have been said that no steadier lad lived in all the fenlands than Barnabas Sackett, nor one who brought better from his fields than I, or did better at the Ealing in the fens that were my home. Then a wayward glance from a lass, a moment of red bursting fury from a stranger, a blow given, and a blow returned, and all that might have been my life vanished like a fog upon the fens beneath a summer sun. In that year of 1599, a man of my station did not strike a man of noble birth and expect to live, or if he lived, to keep the hand that struck the blow. Trouble came quickly upon me, suddenly and without warning. It began that day near Reach, when I slipped and fell upon the Devil's Dyke. The dyke is a great rampart of earth, some 6 miles long, and built in the long ago by a people who might have been my ancestors. These were the Iceni, I have been told, who lived in my country long before the Romans came to Britain. When I slipped, I caught myself upon my outstretched palms to keep the mud from my clothing, and I found myself staring at the muddy edge of what appeared to be a gold coin. Now, coins of any kind were uncommon amongst us, for we did much in the way of barter and exchange. Merchants saw coins, but not many came our way. Yet here it was, a gold coin. Shifting my position a bit, I closed my fingers over first one coin and then yet another. I stood up slowly, and making as if to brush the mud from my hands, I knocked and wiped the mud from the coins. In a pool of muddy water at my feet, I washed them clean. They were old, very, very old. No English coins these, nor was the wording English, nor the faces of the men upon them. The first coin was heavy, of quite some value, judging by the weight. The second was smaller, thinner, and of a different kind. Slipping them casually into my pocket, I stood there, looking about. The hour was before dawn of what bid to be a grey day. Clouds were thick above, and during the night there had been heavy rain. It was a lonely place where I stood, a place about half the distance from Reach to Wood Ditton. We had worked in the quarries at Reach, some of us, and slept the night on a tavern floor to be near the fire. Long before day I awakened, lying there thinking of the distance I had yet to go, with the work now ended. So, quietly I had risen, put my cloak about my shoulders, and took my way to the dyke, the easiest route in any weather. It was a time when few men got more than a mile or two from their door, unless following the sea or the fishing. But I was a restless one, moving about and working wherever an extra hand might be needed, for it was in my mind to save money, buy a bit more land and so better my position. Now I had come upon gold, more than I was likely to earn with my hands in a year, although it was little enough I knew of gold. Had my father stood by me, he could have told me what each coin was worth. I made a thing of brushing my knees, which gave me time to look more carefully about. I was alone. There were willows yonder, farther away oaks and a hedge, but nowhere in the vague light of beginning day did I see movement or sign of men. Carefully, I studied the ground where I had fallen, for where there had been two coins, there might be three or four.